the CU 2.0 podcast. Welcome to the CU 2.0 podcast with your host, Robert McGarvey. In every episode, we probe the massive digital transformation that now is remaking the nation's credit unions. Today's guest, Trudy Soupcoop, a member of the board of directors at Washington State Employees Credit Union, a top 100 institution with about $2.8 billion in assets. Trudy's day job is CEO of Homes First, a nonprofit focused on low-income housing in Washington. Focus of this podcast, what it's like to be a board member in 2018, time of enormous flux for most credit unions. We don't hear enough about what it's like to be a board member. That's why we're doing this podcast today. Hint, being a board member is a lot of work in 2018. One more thing. Tune into the last bit of this podcast to learn about special sponsorship opportunities. You'll want to hear about them. You assumed your position in 2017, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yep.
What prompted you to run?
A couple of reasons. Our credit union had changed from a closed membership to an open field of membership, and I recognized that there were no non-state employees serving on the board. Prior to that, it had been a state employee-only credit union.
Right.
And as a long-term member under my husband, who is a state employee, I thought having representation from the community, because I work for nonprofits, I've always worked for nonprofits, would be a good service that I could provide to the credit union that I belong to. So I had also had some really great experiences with the employees at the credit union and was really impressed by what they were doing in the community. And so when the opportunity arose, I just chose to step up and say, hey, I would be happy to serve in this capacity. I think I have something to a perspective to bring to the board that is needed.
Had you had any interactions with the board before you ran?
No, not at all.
Is being on the board what you thought it would be? Or is it different? Is it more work, less work, different work?
All of the above. So being a member of the board has been an absolutely amazing experience. Having come from the nonprofit world and having a lot of experience in nonprofit governance, I have been happily surprised by the level of knowledge and the level of expectation there is for board members. So board members aren't just coming in and sitting at a meeting and rubber stamping things. They're intimately involved in the brand management and the the effect that the work we do or the decisions we make for the organization, how that directly affects members. And it's far more work than I thought it would be. It's a lot of work. Being on a board, if you're actually engaged with your role, is a lot of work. But this has been a significant amount of work. And that's not a bad thing. I'm actually also learning a ton. And I found out that I actually really do have a lot of skills that I can bring to the table to make what we do better for our members and better for the staff. And that's what I love to do.
Now, how many hours would you estimate that this takes per month?
Oh, goodness. So, we have a 4 or 5 hour board meeting every month. And then I'm on the asset liability committee, so I do that for a couple of hours every month. And then I'm also the chair of the employee of the quarter committee. So it's probably taking at least, between preparation and being at the meetings, probably 20 hours a month.
Yeah, that's a significant commitment. And roughly half the board members are employed, half the board members are retired.
Correct.
So for the employed board members, and you're in that group, it is a chunk of time to commit to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're a fairly significant size of the credit union, right? This is a pretty good size, and I would be concerned if the expectation wasn't for board members to put in the time, because this is not, like I said, it's not a rubber stamp job. This is intimately involved in the choices that are being made that affect members. Board members who are willing to put the time in to be knowledgeable in those areas to make good decisions.
Well, the good news and bad news about the size of your credit union is that at its size, it really should have, and I believe does have, a professional management staff.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Whereas if you're on the board of a $20 million credit union, board members often wind up getting involved in things that governance people would say is management, but there's no one else to do it. It's not necessarily that they're meddling. It's that, oh, I know about this. Let me help you here.
Right, exactly.
And sometimes they meddle too. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, of course, yeah. It's the nature of the beast, right? Humans are like just like that. Right, exactly.
It's just in a credit union your size, I see the board's role really as strictly governance, not so much meddling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that has been pretty impressive, is that this board does, you know, stick to its side of the road, you know. But at the same time, being very attuned to the decisions that are being made and how they will affect the members. So it's not like we're meddling in, you know, how much do we charge on this and how much do we charge on that. But if we charge that much, what will it mean to the members? That's the question that gets asked a lot. If, when we make this choice, how will it affect the membership? And those are, you know, I work in nonprofits and I see that all the time, that board members want to get down into the weeds rather than asking the high level questions that help set the strategic direction. So not seeing that at this level has been very refreshing.
You see yourself as a steward for the members. That's the role of the board member, if I'm hearing you
right. Well, strategy and governance and, yes, really very much the steward for the members to make sure that the members are being taken care of, because they're the reason we're here.
Credit unions are different from banks in that credit unions put members first. Is that always the case? No, it's not. But when a credit union is working well, it definitely does put members first. So.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, one of the things that sets WSCCU apart, is that we really take that seriously. We take that seriously. That is our charge, that members are first.
How does that show up? What initiatives do you see where there's flesh on the bone?
Well, I think members may not see it directly every time something happens, but knowing that behind the scenes there is someone asking that question specifically, you know, as the credit union grows and it looks at more innovation and being more agile and providing more services, sometimes it's easy to slide into the, well, this makes a really good financial decision, right? This is a really good decision because financially it works out, or it puts us at the head of the group who is trying to do this thing, right? An initiative of some sort. And we always come back and say, okay, this is all really great. We love that we're being innovative. We love that we're trying to be agile. However, in our rush to that end, are we remembering how it affects our membership? Right? What does that mean for our heritage members? What does that mean for our new members who are coming in because we've opened our charter? You know, and just asking those questions, and usually there's, you know, a very good answer to it. Yeah, well, this is how it's going to affect. We're, you know, WSCCU has just started some new checking accounts and new credit card options because we see a need for, you know, basically the millennials are coming in and saying, hey, I don't want checks anymore. I don't use checks. I use Venmo. I use, you know, whatever. But we still have our Heritage members who want to have a checkbook. So we don't want to take something away from that group so we can give something to a different group. And those are a lot of the discussions we have, right? How do we ensure that while we move forward, we still remember how we got here? And are we taking care of those members?
Now, the historic, the legacy seg for the credit union, the credit union did not have a lot of low-income people in its membership, right?
Correct. Well, you know, depends on what you consider low-income. So state workers are not all highly paid people. In fact, I have a state worker on my board of directors at my organization who has been considered low-income until this year, and she is in her late 50s.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and so there's a broad range of state workers, from the guy who is, you know, picking up trash in a state park to the, you know, director of a department. And so assuming that because we're state workers, we don't have low-income people, is not exactly correct. And I work with low-income people personally in my job, in my day job, so I know that, right? I see the state workers who are the working poor. But my board member, who is a state employee who works for the Department of Health, is a Habitat homeowner because she couldn't afford on her salary from the state to buy a market rate home. And people don't kind of realize that, I think, in general. You know, everybody goes, oh, state workers, we need to cut their salaries. They're making too much. They're sucking off the... No, actually. They don't all, that's a big generalization, and I think it's the same in every state. I don't think there is any state in the union where all of the workers who work for the state or the county or the cities or anything are all well paid.
Do you see reaching out to the low income as an important initiative for the credit union?
I don't know. Reaching out is kind of broad. I think that there's a lot that we can do in the area of financial wellness for people who are low income, and I think by doing that, they will come to us. We don't need to necessarily go out and say, hey, all the low income people, come on over here, right? There are other credit unions in our area that do specifically that, right? That they really are focused on serving only low income people or making the majority of their membership low income. I think WSECU has a more balanced approach where it is, yes, we are a CDFI and we want to provide opportunities for our community to have better financial health, and that looks different for different demographics, for different income demographics.
Now, QCash is an initiative that
really
benefits, not exclusively, but to a large extent, low-income people, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and that was my assumption, too. But what we're hearing from our CEO of QCash is that it's not – there's a surprisingly large amount of higher-income people who are using it, too, because they're seeing it as a quick way to take care of a short-term problem that they can then pay back. So it's definitely – I think the initial idea was that, hey, this is going to be something that will – really focus on helping low-income people get funding for things like I need to replace the tires on my car and I don't have any extra money, right? But it seems to be attracting a broader group of users, which was a surprise to us too.
Now, do you see QCash as the sort of thing the credit union should do more of?
I think innovation is what the credit union should do more of, and looking at ways that we can support the financial health of all our members, right? And that's kind of what's happening with QCash, is that we thought it was really going to be more attractive to lower income people, but it turns out all our members are appreciating it. And so I think starting out with something that you think could serve a particular group, and then finding ways to use that innovation to spur other opportunities is the way to go. And we care about a healthy community, And, you know, it's part of the reason why we're a CDFI is because we see the need. And now how do we meet that need and not say, oh, well, this is only going to serve this one group of people. But how do we serve lots of different people in a lot of different ways? And every innovation may not serve everyone, but let's find ways that we can have innovation to meet the different groups where they are.
Where do you see technology figuring into the future for the credit union?
Everywhere. That's actually, you know, when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today, you know, the three things that came up were security, governance, and innovation. And mostly innovation is coming around technology. And we, our credit union has spent a lot of time in those three areas, figuring out what is our role in there, and then how do we best serve our members in those three areas. So yeah, technology, you know, QCash is all cloud-based, right? It's all online. And when you're serving a group of people who are lower income, sometimes the only way they have access to technology is on their phone, right? That is the one thing that becomes a constant for them. Even if they don't have a home to live in, they may have a smartphone that allows them to access their bank, it allows them to access the library, it allows them to access, you know, all the things that they need. Their kids' school accounts, their, you know. So I think that is the way we're going.
What does the board do to assist the management in going in that direction?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we just did our annual risk assessment. You know, how comfortable are we in these different areas? And one of the ways we assist is to say we are comfortable with taking some risk in these areas so that we can better serve our membership. And I think that's what the role of the board is to set that strategic direction, look at areas where we are comfortable taking risk on behalf of our members, and then working with the executive team to support the work that they're doing. So whether that's saying, yes, go for it, or saying, hey, in the process of going for it, check in with us so we can, you know, ask those questions around the membership. How is this going to affect the membership? How is this affecting our security? Because if we're not secure, our members aren't secure. You know, I think that's really, from my point of view, what the role of the board is.
Do you think that your board has a comprehension of the role of technology in credit unions and financial institutions?
I think it's always a learning opportunity. I think we have a broad enough generational spread on our board that, and we have a really great executive team who comes in and teaches us a lot, or says, you need to learn more about this, right? So right now we're talking about agile technology, and we're all kind of realizing, wow, we need to know more what that means. We, you know, so we're going out and educating ourselves, and then we're having training sessions at the board level to make sure we understand about technology and what the opportunities are. And, you know, we also have a super smart CEO. Kevin Foster Ketty is amazing, and he helps us understand where we need to be in order to provide the good governance and provide the risk assessment from the board level, especially around technology and security.
Oh, what's your guess of how familiar board members are with using mobile banking?
Oh, we're all on it. we've actually had this discussion recently because, interestingly enough, I was slow to do mobile banking, and about 6 or 8 months ago, we were visiting some of our branches on the east side of Washington, and I had a check I needed to deposit, and I was like, "Yay, we're going to the branch! I can deposit my check!" And they were all like, "You've got to be kidding! Why don't you have mobile banking?" It's like, "Oh, I just never bothered to download the app," and so I did it there, in the van as we were driving. I downloaded the app, I did my mobile deposit, and now I've never stopped. Now I'm just like, it's mobile deposit all the time. And we've had that conversation around that, and I think we all use it now. We all love it. And we're all looking at, we're about to upgrade our websites and some of our mobile deposit capability, and so we're all very excited and asking lots of questions about that too. Are we going to be able to do this? Can we do that? Can we, you know, can we transfer between our own account here at WSCCU and account somewhere else? And, you know, yeah. And but you know, these are just those are, you know, the conversations we have to make sure that we all are up to date. And sometimes that's, oh, we thought we could do that. We can't do that. Or, oh, I didn't know we could do that. Does everybody know we can do that?
Well, it's good that your board uses mobile banking, because I'd say in a lot of institutions, probably not institutions of your size, smaller ones, the majority of the board does not use mobile banking, which I view as unfortunate. So.
Yeah, well, and I think all of our board members are really committed to kind of test driving anything that our members are going to use, right? We want to have that experience that our members have so that when they, because, you know, this is a fairly small city and people know who the board members are, and we could be at the farmer's market and somebody will come up and say, oh, you're a board member, or it's a friend you see, you know, an acquaintance, and they see us at our annual meetings, and, oh, I have this question. Why can we do this but we can't do that? How does that work? So we want to make sure we're well informed. So when we were approached by our membership, we can give them good answers.
Now, your membership, I assume, is dispersed across the state of Washington, not just
it is, but we're in the capital city, so there is a very large contingent of state workers here.
Olympia.
Yeah.
Who do you see as, who's your competitors?
Boeing, Employees Credit Union, definitely over here. You know, we are always comparing ourselves to banks to see that we are offering as good or as close to as good as what a bank can offer, so that we can give our members the option to work with a credit union. We compare ourselves to the other local credit unions, although most of them are considerably smaller than WSCCU. And then in different areas, so on the east side of Washington State, we also have different competitors as well. There's the Numerica, and then there's a Teachers Credit Union in Spokane. And
now, do you feel that you're losing members to banks or to other credit unions, assuming you lose some members?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know that I've asked that at the board meeting. Who do we lose our members to?
I will say that, as a rule, credit union people are reluctant to ever talk about competing with other credit unions. So it was interesting that you mentioned Boeing as a competitor. And
well, I think it's someone we compare ourselves to, right?
Oh,
I don't know if they're in. I don't know if they're in direct competition. Other than, if somebody's going to join a credit union, which one are they going to join?
Oh, I believe. No, right. I think it's kind of a funny credit union habit of never saying we compete with other credit unions, but I believe credit unions do compete with each other. They just don't want to admit it. It's
okay.
And it's easy to vilify, oh, wow, Chase, that's our number one competitor. They're bad.
Right.
How often do you actually compete with Chase? You
know, I know, right?
Really?
Oh, no. Have I broken a rule? Am I going to get in trouble now?
Well, no. I find it refreshing, because I've always thought that for most credit unions, their primary competition is other credit unions.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, I want to join a credit union. And they look at credit unions. You don't look at banks. But do people retire from the board? Do they lose elections for board seats? I mean, how is their turnover?
Well, we have had quite a year this year, actually. Just in the last 12 months, we've had one person who was not reelected. We have had one person who is retiring, and we have had one person pass away.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was, and it was sudden and shocking, and we're all still reeling a little bit from that. So, you know, all of the above.
And how long does it take to get up to speed on the board?
Oh, that's a good question. I was on the board for about a year before I really even started interacting, right? There was a lot of just taking it all in, figuring out what's my role, how do we do this? And then in January, the credit union invested in me taking the CUNA board volunteer certification. And it has just been so incredibly helpful. And so now when new board members are coming on, I am actually saying, you might want to think about this. It's pretty intense. It's time intensive, and it's not just, basket weaving 101. You actually have to learn something, and they test you. You have to pass with an 80% to get the certification. But it's been hugely helpful because there is so much to learn. So I come from a nonprofit background, so I already understand the role of governance. I work for an organization that purchases housing and rehabs it and then rents it out to people, so I understand finances. I understand financial reports. I understand mortgage lending. But there's just so much more to learn, and I think probably every credit union has a different way of operating. So even if I happen to be on the board of another credit union, transferring the basic skills and knowledge would be fine, but then learning the internal mechanisms would always be different. So yeah, it's no walk in the park. It's not like you just walk in and you know everything. You have to really be engaged. The tests that I've been doing with this CUNA class, some of it is so obtuse, and then they do these multiple choice questions that are barely different from one. I feel like I'm in high school again. So some of them are like, what the heck? Why are they asking that question?
Before we go, the CU 2.0 podcast is looking for a few good sponsors to help us spread the word about the digital transformation of credit unions. You could be one of them. Contact Robert McGarvey for details at rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. First come, first served. Again, that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. The CU 2.0 podcast.